Now, this is a direct voice spirit communicator who came through on July the 16th, 1966. His name is Terry Smith. He was a sailor and went down on the Hood. And we've had this verified by the Admiralty.
Good morning.
Good morning, friend.
How are you?
Wonderful, thank you.
Oh, very nice. You've come through. And,
Don't think I know you.
You don't?
Well, I don't remember. No.
Who is it speaking? You don't remember me? You sound very familiar. I don't know.
It does sound a bit too, Friend, can you come along and give us your name, please?
Extraordinary.
Yes?
You know, I really haven't quite got the habit of this business.
No.
It's all very different and strange, too.
Oh, well, could you give us
no.
a talk about your side life or something? Friend, we should be very pleased if you were.
I heard so much about spiritualism and spiritualists and communication and all that sort of thing, but, seems still very strange to me. I did once try to get through the meeting and I couldn't do very much about it, I suppose. It was partly my fault. Really, I still find it all very strange and very puzzling. My name is Terry.
Terry?
Yes. My name is Terry. I'm in no way linked or, you know, anything like that, but...
Is that your Christian name or your surname?
That's my Christian name. I came over here during the war. I was on the Hood.
Oh, were you?
On the Hood?
Yeah.
Will you give your surname, Terry?
It's so weird, this, isn't it?
Well, give me your...
How odd you look sitting there. You look strange, you know, I mean... I suppose it's strange for you in a way too, listening to somebody, you know, sort of speaking like this. It must be very odd, very strange. Oh, I'm here with a crowd of chaps.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I first came over, I was so sort of bewildered. I suppose like a good many more of the chaps do, for that matter, you know, I mean, all happens so sudden. As every man for himself, I mean, there's a... Well, matter of fact, none of us really had a chance, you know. Sort of got... Well, it's hopeless.
Terry,
It's very puzzling, all this, isn't it? I mean, I suppose people are people who... Well, I remember years ago, donkey's years ago now, must be, there was an aunt of mine, she was interested in spiritualism, but I was a bit young anyway, I suppose I didn't take it in. It's an odd business altogether when you come to think about it, that, you know, people think we're dead, you know. I mean, it's fantastic, really, because really I'm more alive now than I ever was, and I sometimes come back, you know, but I lost interest in coming back. It seemed rather pointless business when you think about it. After all, there's not much to come back for, and I didn't have any sort of, I don't know, I suppose I just didn't feel the urge after the first few weeks, or, you know. Seems strange, this business there, to me. You're a spiritualist, I suppose. You've been at it for donkey's years, haven't you? You look old enough to have been at it. You know, I suppose you have been there a long time.
Well, we've been in research on this sort of thing, you see.
Oh.
Yeah.
Kelly, can you describe your reactions when you found yourself still alive? I mean, what happened to you?
Well,
that's possible for you.
Well, it's not impossible, but... I think that the first thing I remember was going up a street. It's a street I'd never seen before. And as a matter of fact, I couldn't realise at first that it wasn't a real street. Although it was a real street in a sense, but not a street that, you know, I've been used to. It was all very attractive, you know, lovely trees on either side of the road. And lovely houses, they were such nice houses, you know, there were little bungalows and dotted about here and there, and there were bigger houses, and it was He was so attractive, and I just couldn't make this out at all. You know, wow. You know, I didn't recognize the place, and yet it seemed as if it could have been somewhere, or I don't know, perhaps in California. So of course it was somewhere I'd seen pictures of, you know, white sort of boulevard with trees and soapy lawns and pretty little village houses and things, you know. Like, it was like a sort of well laid out village, really, but I couldn't make out a tail of it. But I found that there was nobody else about. It was just as if I was all there on my own, you know. Otherwise it's odd, you know. I didn't even realise fully I was dead, I suppose. I thought I was probably dreaming, I suppose. I don't know, it was odd. But the road was not a bit familiar, and yet there was something about it that, I don't know, gave me some sort of peculiar inner confidence, I suppose. But anyway, I just walked along, and all these very pretty houses, and it seemed as dead as the day-day, not a sound, you know, nothing. And then I come further along, and I saw a very sweet lady, very pretty woman she was, I thought, anyway. She couldn't look to more about 28, 30, standing at a little gate. It was the first house that I'd seen with a gate, by the way. All the others seemed to have no entrances, no gates. They just walked up a little path to the front door or something. But this one had got sort of, it's on the end of a, well, after I'd walked a while, and there was this sort of fence around it. And I thought, well, it seems a bit odd, you know, after all the other houses being free of fences and that. Anyway, this was an old lady, this little woman, you know, she was standing there. And funny thing about her was, she looked young, and yeah, I felt she was old. Sounds stupid, I know, but yeah. But she did have this gate, and as I came to her, she sort of smiled, you know, I thought, well, I don't know. She seemed to be the only one, and I stopped, and she said, you're looking for something, Sonny? I thought, bloody. I said, yes, well, sort of, you know, don't quite know what's happening or where I am. Oh, she says, that's all right, Sonny, I've been waiting for you, come in. So I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose, you know, so I'll go in. So at least there's someone to talk to. She took me into the front of, I suppose you'd call it a parlor, you know. Yeah. Nice little room it was, very nice. Chintzy curtains and chairs, and she all looked very homely. There was a cat sitting in one chair, a beautiful black cat. And I don't know, I thought, I don't know, cats, can't be deeper cats. She says, come on, Sonny, sit down. So I sat down at the other chair with no cat, you see. So she said, would you like a drink? I thought, what's this, something like, you know, would you like a drink? I thought she's going to offer me a cup of tea or something. So she says, yes, I would, if you'd please, you know. So she said, what would you like? So I thought, well, I must go cagey, you know, and I look as if I drink, you know. So I said, oh, I'd like a lemon, see. She says, would you? She says, all right. So she goes out and comes back with grass and lemon. I thought, well, I don't know. So she says, you know, you don't need to worry about Sonny, I've been waiting for you. So I says, waiting for me? So she says, yes. So I didn't know what to say. I sort of sat there and she says, you know, you're dead. So I says, what? She says, you're dead. I says, come on, I can't be dead sitting in a room here with a cat over there and drinking a glass of lemonade. And you're solid and real enough, how can I be dead? I said, I mean, it's all a bit strange. I said, at first I thought I was sort of having a dream or something. So she says, well, it's no dream, Sonny. He says, you're dead. So I says, well, if you say I'm dead, how'd I get here? So she says, oh, that's all right. She says, I was thinking and praying for you, and I've been given charge of you. So I says, what do you mean, given charge of me? So she says, well, she says, when your ship went down, and it suddenly came to me, when the ship went down, the last thing I remember, you know, was in the water, holding onto a part of wood, I don't know what part of the ship it was, anyway, it's a bit of wood that I was clinging to, sort of thought it might hold me up, you know, but of course I realised it's hopeless now, but anyway, she says, you were drowned. So I says, oh. And she says, there's hundreds and hundreds of lads, she says, come over. So I says, oh. So she says, yes, and every one of those lads It's got someone, somewhere, to look after them. Some have got their own people, relations or friends. Some have got other souls, and one who's in charge of you. She says you didn't realize, she says, but you were directed. You thought you were walking on your own up the road, she says, but you wasn't. She says you were being helped by inspiration from a soul whose job it is to help people when they come over suddenly like you did. So I says, oh, yeah, you know, sort of listening, I'm not quite taking it all in, you know. So I says, well, I don't understand this at all. So she says, oh, don't you worry. She says, you stay with me. I'll look after you. I'll be like your mum. So I thought, well, that's something, you know. And she started talking about my people. It rather shook me because she seemed to know all about my people, about my mum and dad and how they sort of separated, and about my sister who was in the range, you know, and all that. I thought, well, I don't know. She seems to know anything about us. So I says, well, are you in any way related to us? So she says, well, not really, she says, but it was part of my job to know something about your people, being as though I had to look after you. So I says, well, that's funny. I says, you sound really just come over, how do you know about my lot, you know? So she says, oh, well, that's not difficult. It's only a matter of tuning in, she says. Tuning in, I says, sounds like the wireless. She says, oh, well, we can, she says, if we have any special reason for wanting to know about a particular person or person, she says, and it's a special work that we have to do, and we've got some sort of connection there that's necessary for us to know things, and we tune in. She says, a little later on, she says, not yet. She says, we'll go see your people. So I says, oh, that'll be nice. So she says, of course, she says, you know, they won't know you're dead. I mean, they won't know that you're there. They'll know you're dead, but they won't know that you're still alive, you know, that you can sort of watch them or go and see them, you know. So she says, you mustn't be too upset. No one takes any notice of you. So I says, oh, well, I says, I did have an aunt who was a spiritualist. So she says, well, that's good. She says, perhaps we can get something through that direction. You never know. We'll have to try her. She says, well, for the time being, she says, you must try and be content to be here. She says, I've got a son on earth, she says, and one day, when he comes over here, we should be together again. I expect we shall, she says. But in the meantime, she says, I'm going to look upon you as if you're my own son. And she says, I'm going to do all I can for you and try and make you happy, and you're not to worry, and you're not to sort of feel, you know, sort of alone or anything like that. She says, then later on, she says, when you've rested, she says, I think you should rest. She says, this has all been a bit of a shock for you. She says, I'll take you out and you'll be introduced to all sorts of interesting people in our community. So I says, oh yes, that's very interesting. Then all of a sudden, during the middle of the conversation, this cat did the most funny thing, I thought. It may sound silly, but he jumped off his chair and he came up to me and he fell on his hind legs and he looked up at me and he sort of cocked his ears up and it didn't smell, didn't make no noise like a cat, but it's just as if the thing spoke. I was so shamed. She says, oh, she says, don't worry. She says, you'll get used to that. She says, the animals, she says, over here have developed to a great extent their ability to make themselves understood. Of course, on Earth, in a way, they can do that, but we don't hear them speak because they have no languages. We understand it, but over here, their thoughts are such that they can sort of vibrate, she says, the atmosphere, and you can hear the sounds, and it's merely their thoughts being transmitted to you so that you can hear them. And she says, this cat says, how are you? You know, and I thought, my Christ, this is quite mad, you know. Cats don't say, how are you? And I didn't know what to do, what to say. She says, don't worry. She says, you'll get used to that. She says, animals, she says, are much more sensitive than people realize. and they have their own knowledge of things, and they can transmit thoughts, and they can pick up thoughts. And you will get used to the fact that animals can convey a great deal more from this side than they can on Earth. Anyway, I got sort of adjusted to the idea, and I said, pretty well, thanks. And then it seems as if the cat said, I don't say the cat said this, but it seems as if it said, well, hope you'll be happy here. And I thought, well, this is most peculiar. Then the cat went back and sat on the chair and curled up. And as far as I was concerned, I went to sleep. Because I still couldn't get this at all. She said, don't worry, she says, you'll understand. The animals have a great capacity of understanding. And over here they can transmit their thoughts, same as I can transmit mine to yours, without even the effort of speaking if I want to. So that you can read my thoughts and I can read yours. Thought is a real thing to us and it's very tangible. And that's why animals can communicate by thought force, she says, and whispers me. But you know, it's all got me out of the world. I don't know, it's just something, it's this, you know.
Pretty interesting.
Go on, Terry.
That's so interesting.
Of course, gradually, as I got sort of familiar with everything, and a little later, I suppose it was a little later, she took me out, and what appeared to be, I suppose, the sun, although she told me later there was no sun, that it was illumination for which all of us, you know, all life was able to draw some sort of, I don't know, I suppose some sort of power. But illumination was, the funny thing about the illumination, this may sound odd, but it didn't seem to cast shadows. Although she said that in some places the light did cast shadows, but it seemed to me as if everything was pleasantly bright without being harsh, and there didn't seem to be any shadows, and it didn't seem it was necessary to withdraw, as it were, from the light, because the light was so pleasing and pleasant, and it wasn't over, what you say, hot, you know, you didn't feel it was a pleasant warmth, a sort of, very difficult, sort of radiance, I suppose. Anyway, we went out, I went out with her, she says, well, and she just pulled the door, said, you know, lock your door, she says, there's no need for that here, you know. And much to my surprise, as we went out, the cat got up and walked out and followed us. And it was walking along just as if it was, well, you'd expect a dog and want a cat, I suppose. So she's talking away to this cat. She says, all right, come on, sort of thing, you know. And she kept calling it Nelly. And I thought, well, Nelly's a funny name for a cat. I never heard a cat called Nelly before. And she must have sensed my thoughts, because I found after a very short time that I didn't have to speak to her. She knew what I was thinking. So she says, you think it's an odd name for a cat, don't you? So I said, well, Nelly, I never heard a cat called Nelly. I suppose there's no reason why a cat shouldn't be called Nelly as well as Kittles or something, you know. And she says, well, Nelly's the name that my mother gave this cat. I said, your mother? I said, I'm old, said cat. Oh, she says, this cat must be now, judging by material age, she says, about 60-odd years old. So I said, 60 years old. I said, I don't know, I've heard cats every nine lives, you know, trying to make a lark, you know. She says, well, she says, actually, of course, everybody has many lives. She says, you're having an extension of your life, but you'll find you'll have an extension of this life, and so on. Ad infinitum, she put it like, you know, I thought, well, I don't know, all this is a bit too much. I mean, she says, you'll grasp it all later. She says, you mustn't think that just because you're dead, so-called, that you won't have an extension of life to a degree whereby you'll eventually be able to extend it into another condition of life. So I said, I didn't quite get that, you know. She says, well, for the time being, don't let it worry you something. She says, you know, she says, you'll find that all life is really an extension of a previous life. In other words, she says, you go on and on ad infinitum, she says, you know, and she says, you'll exhaust this plane or this sphere or this condition of life in which you are now, eventually, she says, you'll realize that there's nothing more that you can learn here, or nothing more that's necessary to you here, and you'll feel the urge and the need to extend your experience, and you'll pass into a different existence and a higher sphere, or plane, as she called it, where you'll be able to appreciate and learn and experience all sorts of things that you couldn't possibly experience on this. She says, but that may be a long time yet. She says, there's so much that you've got to experience, so much you've got to learn. And she says, you'll have every opportunity given you to study and to take an interest in so many different things. And she says, if you want to, you can do almost anything, whatever you would like to do or be, you know. She said, when you were on Earth, you were very keen, weren't you, on music? So I says, well, how did you know that? They says, well, you were, weren't you? So I said, well, yes, I used to be very keen on the piano, but I never really was any good at it. So he says, well, you'll have every opportunity, if that's what you'd like to do, to be a really first-class pianist, you know. So I said, well, I can't imagine myself being a great pianist. I said, I like good music, and I used to, you know, try. So he says, oh, well, we shall see, won't we? She said, later on, she says, when you're more settled, she says, and you're more at home, perhaps we'll see what we can do about it. Anyway, she took me up to this. And there again, she said, now another thing. I told you when I came up the road in the first instance, it seemed as if the place was empty. It was like a place where, well, like a dead sea, a place, you know, where no one at all. And yet everything looked trim and nice and clean and fresh and everything. It's as if everybody had gone for an afternoon siesta when I arrived, sort of thing, you know. Anyway, this time going up the road, it was as if everyone was out, standing at the door or coming down to the pathway, you know. And goodness me, I hadn't gone very far up the road, as if we were surrounded by people, all sorts of people, young and mostly young people, one or two seemed to be elderly, and yet, looking back on it, I realized they weren't old, but there was something about them suggesting that there was age, and yet didn't look old. I can't explain that, but anyway, they were all sort of shaking me by the hands and calling me by name. I thought, well, that's odd, everybody knows my name, everyone's calling me Terry, as if they know me all their lives. And I realized afterwards, of course, that there's very little escapes, and if a new person's coming into the community, or a number of people coming from Earth into that community, which as I found afterwards was a special community, really, of souls whose task it was to help newcomers and to guide them and to welcome everybody in this person. They know it's people, and if there's anything we can do. She says, it may be very interesting for you, very sad for you, because they don't realize that you're alive, you know, because therefore when you aren't here, you can't make contact with them. But you did say, I don't know, it's interesting to me, maybe there's something there. But after Wednesday, anyway, in another time I'll come, I'll tell you more about it, because I don't think I can make that. But, you know, a lot of things feel very interesting to me, so you get me now, and see if you can help them. So I thought, well, yeah.
Terry, can you give us your surname up before you... Please?
Yeah, my surname is, I know it sounds common, I mean it's Smith.
Smith, Terry,
yeah.
Smith.
And were you on the hood?
On the hood.
On the hood?
I have to wait until another time, I'm sorry.
Well, it's very nice to
meet you. It's been of interest for me. I don't remember you, and yet I do remember you, Sonny, as if I've met you before.
Have you been in the room where somebody else has been?
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, perhaps another time.
Yes,
I can't hold on.
Rather, Terry, I do hope you've come through again.
Seems to be going.